From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's time for the Outdoor Connection presented by Dave and the crew from Young's Marine in North Platte. Here's your host of the Outdoor Connection, Husker Radio's Rick Windham.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Jonathan Popoli. He is the author of a book entitled Animal Tracks of the Midwest. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you doing? Good morning, Jonathan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great, Rick. Am I having a hard time with the connection here? Here we go, Rick.
Yep, I think we got it. We had a button on the control board that we needed to push.
That was an operator error on my part.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to get good help these days.
It is. Sorry about that, Jonathan and Rick.
Anyway, I found you. I had a chance to review your book, and your publisher sent me a copy, and I was just enthralled with it. I think you did an excellent job on this.
That's really kind. Thank you.
What initially got you interested in tracking as an activity, or in some cases, it's actually a science?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Rick, I'm a city kid. I grew up in town, and I was always really interested in wildlife, but you know, my trips to the woods were pretty short. You know, I'd be for a day hike or a short camping trip, something like this, and I'd occasionally see wildlife, but not all that often. And tracking gave me a window into the lives of the animals in those places that I'd go. So when I did get out into the woods, you know, wasn't as often as I'd like, tracking was what brought the woods to life. You know, I got to see how the animals were moving around when I wasn't there. That's really what hooked me in it.
That is very similar to, I guess, what would be my story. I grew up in a town that has three times as many people as the state of Nebraska has. Houston has about 6 million people, and that's where I grew up. So anytime I could get out of there, I was looking to do it. And I learned how to track, and then I had some other mentors that helped me, and it turned from a fun activity to an art and almost a science to me, to, as I call it, reading the book of nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I still today, especially kids, I'll take them out and just get them to follow a trail. And there's right after a snow is a great time to do it. And I had a young man with me one time, and we were tracking a rabbit. And then when the rabbit came out of the heavier brush in the trees, he made it about 20 yards before a hawk found him. And you could see all that in the snow. And I could just see the wheels turning in his brain as he imagined all that. That was kind of cool.
So yeah, you know, and Rick, I just love that you bring that up, because what hooked me on tracking was that it got, you know, I got this window into the animals. But I think what really keeps me interested is that tracking it's all about solving mysteries.
Yes. You know? Yes.
Like at first it feels a little bit like identification, you know, like identifying trees or plants, you know, which are fun things to do, but it's really different. Cause like when I go out, you know, if I go out with some friends to go look at birds and we see a bird, the object we're looking at is a living being, you know, and the question we're asking is who is that? Who is that? You know, we're trying to see the field marks or get our binoculars on.
Right.
But when we look at a track, the object that we're looking at isn't a living being. It's the ground, you know?
And what's left there. Yeah, the evidence left.
The question we're asking isn't who is this. The question we're asking is who did this?
Exactly.
A fundamentally different kind of question. It's like, I call it like, it's like CSI wildlife, you know?
I like that.
constantly solving mysteries. And it's about like looking for clues and coming up with hypotheses and testing those against what we can see. And like once you get hooked on that way of looking at nature, I think it's literally impossible to ever be bored again.
That is excellent. I had not thought of it quite in those terms, but you have another convert to your school now. I really like that. I've had a blast this last week. I've been hauling your book around, and when I talk to different people and friends of mine, and toss them the book, and I said, "Tell me the track on the front page there," and I've only had one guy be able to identify that.
Oh yeah.
And you know, if you've ever been any place where you've got black bear, you will recognize that's the front right paw of a black bear. And I've just had a ball doing that. And we generally don't have black bears here where we are in North Platte, although occasionally one will show up in either the canyons to the southeast of us, or most often up in our panhandle. Something will wander out of the Black Hills. But
oh, sure, yeah.
And as we've talked a minute ago or so, tracking is an ancient art and ultimately very important to humans. Why do you think we made such a science out of it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, tracking is ultimately, it's about finding animals, you know? and it's also about understanding animal behavior and ecology. But if we think about all of our ancestors, they learned to understand and interpret animal tracks so they could eat and avoid being eaten.
Right.
And also as a way of understanding their environment better, but it was immensely practical. It's just immensely practical. You know, I had one tracking teacher once who said, you know, to get really good at tracking, you have to have a hunger. And he said, think about our ancestors. They had hunger.
Yeah. That's a motivator.
Good at tracking. You know, it's like, where's dinner? But you know, I was talking about this different thought process that tracking requires. And it's a thought process. We think about it, it's really the scientific method. You know, it's seeing clues and coming up with hypotheses and testing those against further observations. And there's a South African tracker named Louis Liebenberg, and he spent decades learning from the indigenous master trackers in the Kalahari.
The Bushmen, yeah, some of the best.
Yeah. And you know, some of whom at the time he started learning from them, some of them were still living in a really traditional way. And he came to argue that wildlife tracking is actually the origins of scientific thinking in human beings.
Interesting concept.
And, yeah, he wrote a couple of books about this, The Art of Tracking and the Origin of Science, where he really lays this all out. And so he's basically arguing that, like, you know, like physicists are tracking subatomic particles using super colliders and tracking distant black holes using their gravitational wave interferometers and this, and that the features of the human brain that evolved to track wildlife may be literally what allowed for all of our modern science and technology, which I think is pretty cool to think about.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. We're born to track, you know, it's a immensely human activity. And so, you know, I think we learn, you know, we develop that because it's so practical, so we can find animals. But now, because it's just so much a part of who we are, I think it's also just a really healthy activity. You know,
it could be.
We're using the brain the way it's designed to be used.
Yes. And, you know, a good excuse to get out, a little exercise. It has all kinds of positive ramifications to it.
Absolutely.
What drove you to decide to put a book like this together?
Oh, yeah. You know, the short answer is because I wanted to really take a deep dive into learning about tracks and tracking.
Uh-huh.
You know, some people say, oh, you should only write about things that you know. My philosophy as an author is I write about things I want to know. I just learned a huge amount writing a book. And so I learned a huge amount writing this. And then, you know, this just is the second edition that just came out. I learned even more updating the book for the second edition. That's when I dove into this.
As a writer, I am a collector of words and thoughts, and I have one in my den where I do most of my writing that says, to truly understand something, you write about or teach it. because you gotta go down and find out the whys. And it helps you become a better student. So I perfectly understand that.
So. Yeah.
How long did it take you to put all this together? I mean, this is not something you do in a couple weeks' time. Man, this must have been years of thinking and playing with ideas.
Right. Well, you know, I was introduced to wildlife tracking in the mid-1990s. And then in the late 90s and early 2000s, I was in grad school, and I was studying about tracking as part of my graduate school program. And then after grad school, I didn't study really actively for a while, maybe like almost 10 years. I was still looking at tracks, but I wasn't going out with other people very much, and I wasn't expanding what I knew. And then I got the chance to write the first edition of this book, and I really dove back into it at that time. And I probably spent maybe just a year just full time doing my research and working on that first edition. But then I never stopped. After that, I just we started a tracking club here where I live, and I've just been going out as regularly as I can with other people. And I probably spent about as much time, you know, hitting the books. And for the second edition, as I did for the first, probably spent about another year just really cranking away and diving back in at a deeper level, and working on the illustrations, which was just a ton of fun.
And they're great illustrations. I was going to ask you who did the photography for all your pictures and stuff, because it's a great picture of the animal, and then it talks about the tracks and a little bit about the biology and stuff. It's very well put together.
Yeah, thank you. Well, and I can't. So the photo credits are like a whole page in the back. You know, you'll have to just go in and look at the photo credits, because we just had a huge amount of support and help. I had I have friends all over the country, expert trackers who I reached out to and asked if I could use images of theirs. And
right.
So right. We'd take up the whole rest of the time if I gave you all the photo credit.
Well, that gives you another excuse for people to go out and buy the book so they can see who the photographers were. I was just thinking, I'll send you a picture that I have of it's like a field mouse or something in the snow, and then the hit from the hawk from above, and the way the feathers splayed out in the snow and stuff. I just keep that one around because that's just cool, watching, knowing that story, being able to assess what happened and then put it into words.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the more common tracks that are in your book? It's Tracks of the Midwest, and I look through a lot of it, and yep, I agree, they're all there, but what do you think are some of the most common ones that people run into?
You know, I think some of the most common tracks that you're going to find are rabbit. That would include like the jackrabbits, raccoon, dogs, and deer. And, you know, the what's interesting about that is like the first three of those, the rabbits, the raccoons, and the dogs, they're not only really common, but they're also some of the most commonly misidentified tracks out there. I think partly that's because they're so common. You know, if you see a lot of them, then, you know, you have more chances to get it wrong, right?
Right.
But also part of it is because, like, raccoons and rabbits, they have reputations as trickster animals. some, right? And part of that is because of their tracks. You know, rabbit tracks, they usually look roughly egg-shaped, but they can show enormous variety. And I have seen skilled trackers confuse rabbit tracks for those of fox, coyote, mink, deer, even mice and frogs. And I'm talking about clear tracks, not like super obscure partial tracks, and not just at first glance, but after some close inspection. I mean, and honestly, I might have done the same thing myself and never even known it, right?
I'm having a hard time imagining missed identifying a rabbit track for a frog. That just blew me away.
Well, the thing about the rabbits is they have these really stout claws, and sometimes only the claws register in the ground. The ground's firm enough that all that happens is the claws dig in, and you get this little arc of claws that looks almost exactly like the toes of a frog when they leap off of the mud.
Okay.
And so all these different varieties, raccoon tracks are classic trickster tracks. We actually have a joke in our club where we say, all tracks are raccoon until proven otherwise. Because they're so common and they have such a variety. You know, usually they look like tiny little handprints.
Right.
You know, you see that classic raccoon track and it's unmistakable. It's like, oh yeah, it's just like a little tiny handprint. But sometimes they look like bobcat tracks or otter tracks or woodchuck or opossum. I've even seen them mistaken for fox and coyote. And they have raccoons have this unusual way of walking that usually leaves a really distinctive track pattern, these side-by-side pairs.
The waddle, as I call it.
Yep, exactly, that raccoon waddle. But sometimes they lope like otters or bound like woodchucks. And I really think that the raccoons were put here on Earth just to mess with trackers' minds. I do wonder about that.
I hear music in the background, which tells me that Tristan says it's time for a commercial. So if you could stay with us, I got a few more questions for you, Jonathan.
Happy to.
And folks, we'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Jonathan Popoli this morning. We're talking about animal tracks of the Midwest. And when we were left there before the commercial break, we were talking about some of the animals that get often confused. And you mentioned dogs, and that definitely is one. I get a lot of calls from people say, oh, man, we got a mountain lion on the property. And I'll go out, and they'll say, what do you think that is? And I said, probably a Labrador retriever. Because, you know, you see the claw marks with the canine footprint. But
yeah,
that's always a fun one.
It absolutely is. You know, and I one of my friends who teaches tracking programs likes to say she thinks the best tracks to get to know are dog tracks. They probably get confused for other things more often than anything else. And there's so many breeds. You have just a lot of variety.
Oh, yeah.
And they're so accessible, you know, like you can go out and you can watch dogs on a beach and then go right over and look at their tracks and not only learn what the tracks look like, but start to learn how the track patterns show you behavior.
Yes.
So dogs are just wonderful, wonderful animals to learn to track. And boy, once you can separate out like a dog track from a coyote track, then you know you're really, really starting to see the tracks.
There you go. We were talking earlier about, you know, kind of the science of behind tracking. If you have somebody new, how would you go about telling them about how to start tracking and then figuring out what they're looking at?
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, I have to do the shameless plug, right? You want a good guide. and it just helps to have the pictures, to have the visuals, helps to have some good information. But then you just want to think about it. Like I was saying before, you want to think about it almost like a crime scene investigation. We're looking for small clues, but you also need to take in the big picture and you want to consider every possible suspect and avoid jumping to conclusions. You know, that's a, really, really important thing is people often say, you know, you should go with your first impression, go with your gut, not just in tracking, but in all kinds of things. But the truth is that research shows that we're more likely to arrive at a correct answer when we make careful consideration of all the evidence we have in a systematic way. If you think about it, you know, like, would you want a police detective to just like go with their gut and arrest somebody? Like, well, no, we want them to do a really thorough investigation of all the evidence available. So we want to be the same way. We want to be systematic and thorough. And there are basically three different like levels, three different scales that we look for information. One is getting really close and looking at individual tracks and the shape of a track, how many toes and how large the toes are and the shape of the palm pad. And then we also want to step back a little bit and look at the pattern of tracks on the ground and see if we can understand how the animal was moving from that pattern of tracks. And then we also think really big picture, habitat, range, you know, what animals are around here, what animals use this habitat.
Right.
And then based on all that, maybe we pick our top three candidates. And for each one of those candidates, we try to build a case both for it and against it. Okay, why is this a raccoon track? Well, we're along a stream bank, and raccoons often forage along stream banks, and the toes look kind of long, you know, and okay, well, why is it not a raccoon? Like, well, I'm not seeing that side-by-side pairing of the tracks the way I usually do with raccoons. So we do that. We try to build the case for and against each one. And then using all of that, we go back and look for more evidence to support or challenge one of those interpretations. And one thing that really, really helps is to do that with somebody else. You know, to have somebody to bounce ideas off of, to have people to ask, you know, to ask questions, have someone say, okay, could you explain to me one more time why you're saying this? We're always better tracking with other people than we are tracking by ourselves. You know, we like to joke when we go tracking by ourselves, we're always right.
You sound like you have a good group in your club there. That sounds like fun.
Oh, we do. We do. But, you know, you get somebody else out there and, you know, a little good-natured challenging of each other back and forth. And we just come to better interpretations. And we break through some of those preconceived ideas. And that's where we grow as people and as naturalists is when that happens. So that's the process. And don't track alone.
Don't track alone. This has been an extremely enjoyable interview for me and a topic that is near and dear to my heart, but we've run out of time. I'm going to have you back on sometime. We'll carry on maybe with a good story or two about tracking, but before we leave, where can people find your book and how much does it cost? What's the going rate right now?
Yeah, well, the going rate is $18.95, and you know, a lot of state park and wildlife refuge gift shops carry the book, and you buy it there, you're supporting the parks and stuff, so I think that's great. Otherwise, you can go to my website, and I have links through to a bookshop.org shop, and that's my name, jonathanpopoli.com.
Okay, very good. I thank you very much for your time this morning, and this book is definitely going to be something I use in my library. And I have what is known as the Christmas wish list that I've been doing for 20-something years, and I think this is going to make the list already for 2022.
Well, Rick, it's been a delight, and thanks so much, and thanks for your interest. Really appreciate it.
You bet. That's it. That's what we have for this week, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.